We are Dukes and Bell. We start off every day and every hour by saying, hey man, hope you're having a great day. Mike and I had a spirited conversation about Nick Saban testifying in front of Congress, talking about helping college football. And look, it does need help. I don't know if this helps or not. Interesting things coming in from our listeners about, hey, because I was saying I felt like this is a little bit hypocritical for Saban, who ran college football the way he wanted to do it. And now it's like, all right, the rules have changed, and now we need all this change. But we do. Look, I don't think there's a college football fan, Mike, that watches the sport right now or watches where this is going that loves the direction of it.
It's funny because people ask us, well, how would you fix college football? I always say the same thing. Get a time machine because you got to go back to like 1990, and you got to get the NCAA to just allow. Again, it's you could have nipped this in the bud. I know we're crying over spilt milk, but before the Ed O'Bannon trial and everything else, all you had to do was the NCAA, like, okay, 1% of all TV revenue from football and basketball goes to the athletes.
This would have been done.
And then everybody has walk-around money. You know, it would probably come out to guys making 50 grand a year. Everybody.
Yep.
Like the 50, you know, the 60th guy on the roster.
It would have been done.
They didn't do it.
No, it's look, it's valid.
Amateurism.
Well, because they were so stuck on this. And let's be honest, this is the other part. This isn't just Nick Saban. This was coaching across the board. Coaches wanted control, Mike, and they had it.
Right.
They could leave.
Anytime they want.
They could take other jobs. They could leave kids high and dry, but they didn't like the fact that kids were you know, the idea of them being able to leave when they wanted to. So all of this is played out. But, yeah, it's interesting stuff. We'll get back into that because he did have some interesting comments. We're talking about Coach Saban today testifying in front of Congress. They're trying to get this bill passed, guys. It needs bipartisan support. This is the only way it's going to happen. It's not going to be the NCAA. Mike's talked about this. The NCAA is not going to do this.
And one of the things we talked about, you know, Michigan, it's egregious. Everybody knows what it is. Slap on the wrist. I mean, a show cause for a guy who's moved on to the NFL is nothing. And so the NCAA, Carl's basically the argument that it's too big to fail. So they're not going to investigate. One thing we learned from folks is when they went to NIL and everything started, all the compliance people for the NCAA, or I should say all the investigators, became compliance officers for all the big schools.
They left.
So they don't have anybody to investigate in the first place. That's why it takes them 2 years to get under the fingernails of Michigan.
It's a great point. And by the way, when you have 100, 150 years of football, you're not killing it.
No.
And that's just the reality. All right, let's talk some Falcons because Drake London gets his deal. Here's where I think a lot of people are like, wait a minute. He's the third highest paid now wide receiver in the league behind Jaxon Smith-Njigba and Ja'Marr Chase. The answer is yes. But understand, timing is everything. This isn't Drake London pounding his feet and his agent Mike saying, if we're not top three, that's not how this works. Drake London's 24 years old. When you start talking about, you know, again, JSN is also 24. He had an amazing year. Seattle wins the Super Bowl. Guys, he gets rewarded. But I think when you start talking about being a guy in the top five, and I think that's where we had him pegged, Mike.
Right.
We didn't know what the number would look like, but I said anything over 35 I thought would be too much. That's me. But if he got it, so be it, because the timing of it is, who set the market last, and then when are you up?
Now, we didn't have a lot of cap space last year. At least we didn't seem to, and we're not capologists now. As you know, we've got some new people. We got this guy we brought from the Eagles, who's apparently one of the best at it, to be vice president of football. But Garrett Wilson got his contract extension. The reason I mentioned him, he's in the same draft class as Drake London.
Yes.
He got 30, it would average out to 32.5. So you and I always thought that was the starting off point. So 35 sounds about right. It's not on the books this year. He's paying for $16 million for the fifth-year option.
That's right.
But next year it kicks in, but Drake right now, 32.5 puts him over Justin Jefferson as far as the totality of the package. The value is $141 million. Justin Jefferson's contract was $140
million. Let me ask you guys this. Do you see our guy in the same light as, and I'm not going to use Chase or Jefferson, CeeDee Lamb, DK Metcalf, Mike just mentioned Garrett Wilson, AJ Brown, who just got traded, Amon-Ra Ross St. Brown. Do you see him in the same light?
I think with a decent quarterback, when he can see, the thing is,
and that's the key, right?
He didn't, you know, he had, think about it, he had Marcus Mariota, Desmond Ridder, Kirk Cousins. The 1 year he gets over 1,000 with Kirk Cousins was reliable. And the one thing we said, now, I have not seen any Falcon fans say it was too soon or he doesn't deserve it or whatever. I think he's one of the toughest guys on the team. We talked about his intensity. This guy is an alpha. He's a leader. He played through a lot of pain. As many games as he missed last year, he probably should have missed three or four more, if we're honest.
Mm-hmm.
But he wouldn't do that. And he run. Think about the other thing. You got a run block on this team. He does
you do.
That.
You do.
You know, and he makes the contested catches, and they generally has to because rarely has the ball been in his hands in a catchable position the last 4 years.
I think for Ian Cunningham, our new general manager, Matt Ryan, president of football, this is the first big deal for them. It's not going to be their last. But I think here is the commitment to understanding, and this was a no-brainer for me, actually, guys, and I hope it was for you as Falcon fans. You drafted him, eighth overall. You developed him, even though he's been through a couple of different coaches.
Right.
And he has proven he's worthy. You pay him. He's a core guy. And if you're going to make, inroads towards trying to get not only to the playoffs but to a Super Bowl, I think he's a big part of that. And again, age matters. He's a young guy. We forget how young Drake is.
Right.
And so,
Four-year extension, by the way.
No, it's great. I think, Mike, again, you look up, he's 28, maybe 29. He maybe gets another big bag.
Right. Bryce Johnston, by the way, that's the guy we hired from the Eagles.
Yes.
That was their cap guy. He's now our senior vice president of football operations.
Good call. So I just, I think if you have any issues with this or you're going, why are we doing this now? And like, this was when it should have been done. We said before the season started. Once the season starts, they don't do these things. Then the other part of it is, what was the number? It doesn't hurt us. The cap continues to go up. Don't get caught up in, well, how are we going to pay Bijan? They will. How are we going to do that? They will. This is simply about right now, Drake's time, and they take care of him. And I'm glad they did, Mike, because it also sends a message to all these young guys. Jalen Walker.
Right.
The James Pierce Juniors of the world. Keep performing. And you're going to be in this same spot in a few years where we're taking care of you. I think that's important.
The only thing that came up, some guys brought it, why not Bijan first? I mean, look, you could do it. You know, Dimitroff would generally take care of guys sometimes going into the fourth year to kind of get ahead of it.
Yeah.
But now with the cap going up, the only guys that we looked at in the immediate future, you got two more years with Penix. If he balls out and becomes that guy, you'll have the fifth-year option. So you've got 3 years. You don't have to worry about that. Is Bijan, of course, is going to get paid, and he'll reset the market for running back as well. He should. You got to worry about Jesse Bates. Is he a guy that'll be a cap casualty? Only if you mishandle it. You got Bergeron, right? Matthew Bergeron That's will need right. a contract too. And then Jake, Jake is. You look at our contracts right now. Lindstrom, I think Lindstrom's the biggest number before Drake got his new deal. Now Drake obviously is the big dog,
and Lindstrom's lived up to it. By the way, he's been all that. If you asked me about the company of guys that he's now in with just the salary, right? We're talking about the annual average value, which is 35.2. And again, it kicks in next year. I would tell you, just like Jamar Chase or Njigba or Jefferson or Lamb, he is the go-to guy on this team. And that's what I would tell you. As far as we need a first down, I need to throw the ball in the end zone. Mm-hmm. I said this to Mike earlier. I don't know if there's another contested wide receiver, like 50-50 ball guy in the league outside of Mike Evans, who's now right. a little bit older, a little bit long in the tooth. But Mike, early in his career, that's where he made his hay. You throw it up there, you didn't have to be perfect. He played with like 9 quarterbacks before he won a Super Bowl with Brady, Mike, and every year he's putting up 1,000 yards. I think it allows your quarterbacks, and now this gets to Penix and Tua, you don't have to be perfect with Drake. You can put it out there, he'll make a play on
right.
the ball.
And I think Puka Nacua would be in that category. Of course,
yes.
He's had some silly things off the field. That's why they're not giving him an extension just yet. They're kind of Rams like, we'll wait for you. We're not going to rush that.
We'll wait.
Speaking of being in timeout, and now he's out of timeout, and we never thought it was going to be anything. We knew this was a bunch of nothing. You missed it earlier, guys. It happened about 2 o'clock. It came official that Zachariah Branch had the charges dropped by Athens-Clarke County. The ESPN report said that Georgia State prosecutors looked at the evidence, video, and said that he did not commit a crime the night of the arrest back on April 19th when he was told to basically move off the sidewalk. Sounded like, sounded like a bit of an ego trip or a cop or a guy. You did not respect my authority. Either way, that's over with. Done.
Overzealous?
Yeah. I mean, look, there are things that are worth getting upset over. That's not it. Especially when you got a bunch of like 100 different people on the sidewalk and you pick on the Georgia football player to tell him, oh, you're not listening to me?
Yeah.
Turn around, put your hands behind your back.
We had Zachariah on maybe the second day of the first OTAs.
Right. And it was so impressive.
Yeah, it was our first time to have him on the show. And we'll get him throughout the course of the season and all the things that are going to play out. But, yeah, Mike said earlier, like, we've talked to at least a few Georgia players that have been drafted, okay, by the Falcons. And they're just ready. We said it the day after or the day of the interview, and Jalen Walker, he walked out of the studio with this up there at Flyer Branch, and I said to Mike, dude could be a CEO right now.
Just
like
impressive.
He feels accomplished. But even though he hadn't done anything yet for the Falcons on the football field, he just had an air about him. And I feel the same way about Zachariah Branch. His approach, Mike, and that's what you're hearing from his teammates, right?
Right.
He's going to make plays, guys, but it's that approach. Hey. I get back to say that, Mike, just to get back to, he ain't a troublemaker, y'all.
No.
That's not in his DNA.
And for guys who are only hearing one side of this conversation in your ears, the way you're processing it, we back the blue. We know it's a tough, thankless job, but sometimes it's tough and thankless because sometimes cops do the wrong thing. But we know how difficult it is. We got a lot of friends in law enforcement, but this was, it just seemed like the Barney Fife, Athens, Clark County, doing what they've done before when fighting the drug war, like 1/3 of an ounce at a time. You know, remember when those guys get narked out in their dorms? Remember that day, a couple of years back? It's like,
who was smoking? Right.
Call the SWAT team. We've got weed. You know? Yeah. So either way, good for Zachariah Branch. As we said, we always felt it was a big nothing burger.
Hey, man, we want to give you a chance right now to win a staycation comfort giveaway from Reliable Heating and Air, which includes a $150 gas card, $150 grocery gift card, and a free cooling system tune-up. All compliments of Reliable Heating and Air. Caller 5, Day-Day, is going to win this nice staycation comfort giveaway from Reliable. Caller 5, 404-726-0929. Get on it, man. We're trying to help you out and help you for the summer. Thanks to our friends at Reliable Heating and Air.
Hey, man, do you ever wear socks that have individual toes in them?
No.
Works for Matt Olson.
Okay, we got to find out more about that with Grant McCauley next. Benjamin Puckett in Tequila. Thank you for listening to Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. He wins the staycation comfort giveaway from Reliable Heating and Air. We got more of those to give away, so stay tuned. Also want to remind you before we get to Grant and talk some Braves here, we are your home of comprehensive World Cup coverage, guys. It's Sports Radio 92.9 The Game every night from now through the end of the tournament. Join Jason Longshore for special editions of Atlanta Soccer Tonight. Jason will be covering all of the major storylines with previews and analysis of every match all the way through the final on July 19th. It's brought to you by Ford. Visit your local Ford dealer and by Michelob Ultra, official beer sponsor of FIFA World Cup 26. That's Atlanta Soccer Tonight with Jason Longshore every night from now through July 19th on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. With that, we welcome in Grant McCauley, our Braves insider, and he covers MLB for us. And Grant, Mike was just asking me a question about socks. So ask Grant, because I need answers.
Right, Grant, I'm watching the ball game on Braves Vision last night. And again, the producers always do an amazing job. The timing was impeccable. They got Wiley Ballard explaining these individual toe socks that apparently Matt Olson wears because he wants to, I guess, try to alleviate the toe turf type injury. And no sooner than he basically golfs at a 49% degree launch angle home run. But so how long has he been wearing these funky socks?
I have not done any investigative reporting on anyone's socks as of yet, so that was a new one by me. That's an exclusive for Braves Vision, so tip of the cap to them. But whatever works, because it's a long season, and you're going to have all kinds of different aches and pains and you know things that creep up on you. So if you can find a little something that makes you more comfortable, I've not done the toe socks, but hey, if that works for him, who am I to knock it?
Yeah, well, look, it's working for him because he leads all first basemen in home runs. He leads OPS, and the 36 extra base hits leads all MLB players. We're talking about Matt Olson. So how do you define what Matt Olson has been to this team this season, Grant?
I mean, if you're looking at a guy who's making a great case to be an MVP in the National League, not just for the Braves, Matt Olson's putting that case together. He has done pretty much everything that you would ask for him in the ideal role if you're scripting it together. He's putting together, as you mentioned, all the extra base hits. He's on pace for 44 home runs, 125 RBI nearly, 115 runs scored. All of those are things that you don't love to see a first baseman that can fill up the stat sheet like that. And he's OPSing north of 900. And apparently, he can hit a 49-degree launch angle home run last night. Mike, you mentioned that. StatCast has been around since 2015. Only three other home runs, over-the-fence home runs, have had a higher launch angle than Matt Olson's last night. So there have been a lot of home runs hit in baseball over the last decade plus. Matt Olson had one of the most unique ones you'll see. But as far as his impact on the club, I think it's the steady, everyday, you know, workmanlike approach of Matt Olson, not to mention the impact that that bat can make. And it certainly was felt again last night.
We talked yesterday about, you know, Bryce Elder and some of the things that happened in the loss to Boston wasn't his fault, but it was five earned runs, three more earned runs yesterday. Is he got to tweak a little bit? Is he pitching to too much contact?
I don't think so. I felt like last night, and Matt Olson's home run was a good example of it because there were some other StatCast data where I think that his home run ball may have been pushed 20-plus feet to get over the wall by the wind. And that was the same thing for the home run, the two-run homer that he gave up. It's usually, this is not a park, and Walt Weiss talked about this after the game yesterday, where you think about the wind factor. This is not Wrigley Field. It's not one of those places. But there was a jet stream going out to right field yesterday. So Bryce is going to pitch to contact a little bit more. I think he misses enough bats. But as you go through the league, you know, time and time again, more so than ever now, there's plenty of tape. Everybody's putting together their best plan. The Braves are doing it for who they're facing. So Bryce Elder and whoever's catching, and it's this case Sandy Leon last night, you've got to try to stay one step ahead and do some adjustments. And I asked Bryce, you know, having had the experience of going through a long season and starting every fifth day, what have you taken from that, and has that helped you this year with some of the adjustments that you're making start to start? Just the overall experience factor. And he said that it has. Having Sandy behind the plate, I think, was also a big help for him. But he also revealed that last night was the first night in his career he felt like he just did not have his sinker. It just was not working for him. And that's a weird pitch to take out of his mix and then ask him to go through a major league lineup. So I felt like it was kind of one of those grittier performances that might just fly under the radar a little bit as far as Bryce Elder is concerned. It wasn't his easiest night, but it was a night in which he got the Braves into the seventh inning and helped them win a close game.
Hey, real quick, I know we don't talk a lot about it because it's one of those things, the you know, consecutive game streak. Back to Matt Olson just real quick. Mm-hmm. I think he's at 843 or somewhere around there, Grant. But he's on pace to pass Stan Musial, which is a big deal. If he, you know, continues to play every day, which we think he is. I just feel like it's a big milestone, but we don't talk a lot about it. I mean, the Cal Ripken thing's out there, obviously Lou Gehrig Day yesterday. But there are people who can't make it to work 4 days in a week in a row. And this guy, we're talking about 843 consecutive games. I think it's a pretty big deal.
Yeah, I think it's a big deal. And it's something that, you know, maybe in today's game is not looked upon quite the same because, A, nobody's doing it. So now it's maybe even a bit more unique than it would have been before. But there are not too many guys that have 800-plus consecutive games, which if you just do the quick math on that, that's 5 straight years of not missing any work. To get over 1,000 would be a very impressive milestone for Matt. And I've asked him about, you know, what it means to him. And he said, look, I come to the park and I expect to play. I want to play. He's like, I never talked to Brian Snitker about it. It just worked itself out every single day. And the same thing is true with Walt Weiss. And he's played through some aches and pains and some different things that everybody does over the course of a season. But he believes that, like, his job is to be out there manning first base and trying to help his team win. So, again, it's that workmanlike approach. It's not loud. It's not flashy. He's not looking for all the accolades. He's not the loudest voice in the room. But his bat carries significant weight, makes plenty of noise for him. And his overall, I think, you know, place on this team is well-known and well-regarded as being just one of those true pros and a guy that the Braves are very, very happy to have.
Grant, I know we spoke yesterday about Jorge Mateo and the job he's been doing and contributing, you know, every night. I didn't realize, you know, I know you know this because you're the best baseball man in town, but at one point he was above Aaron Judge in the Yankees organization as the top prospect. So is it now all coming together for him here?
That's an interesting question, and I actually asked Walt Weiss about Jorge and this first couple of months and what he's shown him, and he said, well, to be honest with you, when we were sitting down looking to make the roster, Mateo was always the guy that I'd had my eye on, and he has power, he has speed, and sometimes guys with those kind of tools, you don't know when they put it all together, but he had just mentioned that, hey, this is a guy that I like, and then sure enough, who ended up in Braves camp? Who ends up on the opening day roster? Who is now the beneficiary of some at-bats? Because, you know, it's a balancing act, and Weiss, you know, talked about that as well, where, you know, there's a lot of baseball left to be played, as we've talked about the last couple of weeks. Ha-Seong Kim has a role to play on this team, but right now, there's maybe a better opportunity for Jorge Mateo to take advantage of how well he's playing and leverage that into some playing time. And I think he's kind of made the most of it. But you never know with these toolsy type players, even if they've had some looks in the big leagues before, when something might just click for them and they might get into the right hitting environment or a number of other factors, and they just figure out a way to do a little bit more than they've done in the past. And Mateo, Walt said, hey, I didn't know a ton about him, but every time I saw him, I thought there's something there. And sure enough, he ended up in Braves camp and has ended up being a guy that could help this club out and has given them some depth with elite speed off the bench. If nothing else, you feel like, hey, we get the tying run on or the go-ahead run on late. We can put this guy out there. He can steal us a base, and we might win a baseball game.
It's true. Grant McCauley, pitching matchup today is Grant Holmes. Toronto sending out Patrick Corbin. I think Toronto's underachieving right now with all the money they've spent. And, you know, again, this is ebbs and flows. But would you agree with that first and foremost? And then let's talk about Grant Holmes with Toronto underachieving.
Yeah, definitely with Toronto. I mean, they were a team that, quite frankly, were a good lead from third base by Kiner Falefa away from winning the World Series. So there's that little factoid that you can leave out on the table, which is probably going to be something Blue Jays fans have to come to terms with. But if I can come to terms with Ed Sprague, then they can deal with that. So I just kind of look at this as a club that there's stranger things have happened than a team kind of, you know, just floating along around 500 for the first couple of months and figuring things out. Vladimir Guerrero Jr. is sitting on 3 home runs. He has not made an impact yet this year. That's not going to be where he is when the year's over if he's healthy. He's going to make a bigger impact. They've had some injuries they've had to deal with. Their pitching has been a little bit wonky. Their bullpen mix has also been a little bit of a problem. So there's something to be said for catching teams at the right time. And for the Braves, I would say if you have to play a Toronto Blue Jays club that was in the World Series last year, what they're currently comprised and what they're dealing with is a pretty good time for him. So hopefully for Grant Holmes, that gives him the opportunity to work through this lineup a couple of times, put the Braves in a good position bullpen-wise. They didn't have to go through a lot of their arms yesterday thanks to Bryce Elder getting into the seventh. And you can hopefully pile up some runs. Patrick Corbin has been knocked around by the Braves for years. He was with the Nationals and, quite frankly, one of the worst starting pitchers in Major League Baseball the last 4 or 5 years. He's been a little bit better this year, but I think the Braves are pretty familiar with him, so we'll see how they choose to attack him.
Yeah, when you look, I'm looking at the overall numbers. It's just crazy is how many teams have got more home runs than Toronto, man. That's just nuts.
Yeah,
and you wouldn't expect it. And the Braves, obviously, are right up there behind the Yankees with 98. Yeah, the other thing, and Carl, we were joking around about it. I mean, I'm not complaining about Raisel Iglesias. It just last night was a little off-putting, but he got through it.
Yeah, and he's done that pretty much all year. I mean, he's been one of the more dependable closers you're going to find, but every once in a while, you know, a ball has eyes or you give up a couple of hits. And in a one-run game, that's really all it takes to get that rally going. But Raisel, I think, is just somebody who you know, even when he's dealing with that kind of stuff, if he's right, you feel like he can get out of it. And last night, he was able to pretty quickly put that rally down. And the next thing you know, it was a win in the books for the Braves and a chance to win another series today.
All right, man. Great stuff as always. Let's just keep rolling, man. I mean, that's been the key. And last night, look, I like fun, entertaining games that come down to the end. But I just always feel like the way this team has responded this season, it's going to be us. I know we're going to lose a few of those, but it feels that way, right? At the end of these games, you're like, oh, we're going to finish this thing.
Hey, 20 come from behind wins of their 41 wins this year, so they've been trailing throughout the course of this year and found a way to overcome it. So even when you're down, you feel like this is a club that can put it together and figure it out. So hopefully they can have the come from behind wins when they need to, but we'll take a nice easy one too.
No doubt. All right, Grant, thanks so much, man. Enjoy the game.
Thanks, guys.
All right, that's Grant McCauley. Real quick, he was talking about them coming together as far as Toronto. We forget Max Scherzer is on his way back.
Right.
Dylan Cease is on his way back. Like, they have some injuries that have impacted them, but the home run, like, guys are not living up to their contract.
No, man. As we said, the Braves have got 98 home runs. You know, that's, or check that, 85 home runs. Yankees have 87. I was looking at doubles. Doubles are nice, too. But when it comes to home runs, yeah, the Toronto lack of power right now, just 57 home runs for the Blue Jays. And you know, who's also in that category is kind of terrible. Good and terrible. The Mets. They're not hitting home runs either.
Good and terrible.
Yeah.
They are terrible.
Let's see. And the Mets, yeah, that's another disaster. 61 home runs. Just, that's all they got.
Are we about to embark on one of the most anticipated finals in more than a decade? Wait until you hear what Brian Geltzeiler had to say.
I know. I was going to say yes.
It's coming up. It is the NBA Finals. It's Dukes and Bell, Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. Knicks beat the Hawks, and we're going to talk about this series and what our buddy from Sirius XM Radio, NBA Sirius XM, Brian Geltzeiler, had to say to us about it. But before we do, Mike and I were just talking about some other NFL things, guys. We know the Falcons have another OTA session coming up next week, and then they got mandatory mini camp right in the middle of June, and then they're done until training camp. And so you're starting to get updates on certain players around the league. And you just said, hey, I just saw this update on Micah Parsons.
Yeah, Sporting News had the story that they thought that maybe he'd be on the PUP list. Now the New York Post Sports Department has a tweet that says, Packers are going to miss Micah Parsons until maybe mid-October. He had a second knee procedure and apparently, I guess, a cleanup on whatever went on with the meniscus. And he basically says, hey, it's 9 months from the time you had it done. He says, we have a pretty strong 9 month rule, especially if you had other things that had to get fixed up. This is Micah Parsons speaking. So it could be mid October at best for the Packers. And you and I were just saying off the air at the time, I thought, you know, Jerry, what are you doing? Yeah. And like, no one can foresee a freak injury, especially playing on natural turf. But either way, Packers now, big question mark about Micah Parsons.
Yeah. And you're right. I mean, he doesn't come off the PUP list and immediately is ready to play. So right. To your point, it may be a couple more weeks after that. All right, look, I'm not hyping this up. Hype me up.
You can hype it all you want.
I think because of the fact that it's the Knicks, okay, they have star power too, and the Spurs, despite what it used to be, and it was boring, there's no doubt, right? The Spurs were one of the best teams in the league, but it was the big fundamental, as Shaq says, yeah. And it was just like, okay, they're
Manu Ginobili and Tony Parker, yeah. And it, like, rinse, repeat. Right? You know, guys off the bench, like, who's our buddy? It's like all the rings where he goes I'll think of it in just a second. But anyway, they always had good bench players.
They did. No, they had a solid roster. But this is different because of the Wimby effect. So just to give you a heads
Robert
up.
Robert Horry.
Oh, yeah, Robert Horry with the rings. Yeah. They had a ton of guys over the years that helped them win championships. But Knicks versus Wimby guys, and understand the Western Conference Finals had huge ratings. Comparable to last year's NBA Finals. So now you put the team that won in the Western Conference into the finals, taking on the Knicks, and people are saying this is the most anticipated NBA Finals since the LeBron versus Steph Curry days. Now, you're going back a decade, right?
Right, when that 2015, started. Right? That's when Draymond got teed up and they blew the 3-1 lead.
Correct. So let's talk about what to expect, because Wimby is really the issue, right? You go, well, how do you slow down this guy? How do you try to play him? And our buddy Brian Geltzeiler said, look, it's not the offense. It's the defense that New York's going to have to be concerned about.
Well, let's start with this. I think the Knicks' concerns regarding Victor Wembanyama have less to do with what he does on the offensive end of the floor and more what he does on the defensive end of the floor. The one thing they have to be concerned with in this series is how are they going to keep Victor Wembanyama on the Spurs' defensive end of the floor away from Jalen Brunson. That's what the Knicks have to worry about, because in so many scenarios, it worked for the Knicks to run a Brunson Towns two-man game. I don't think that's going to work here, because ultimately, if you look what Victor Wembanyama did to Shai Gilgeous-Alexander in the Oklahoma City series, SGA and Jalen Brunson are probably the players in the NBA. And he took SGA out of his rhythm in mid-range, mostly because he was a shadow. Everywhere that SGA went, Wembanyama was right behind the defender, making him have to change normal mid-range shots that he takes.
Lowest odds, by the way, in Vegas have it at 6 games. So if you want to bet where the series goes, basically you're going to make money if you bet it goes in 4 games. I don't think anyone sees that being a sweep. That's why the odds are so high. The money line, Spurs are -188 right now. Knicks are +158. So almost 2-1 for the Spurs in Vegas is mine. So you're going to you're gonna have to give to get, because the Spurs, I think, and you and I were going round and round on this. He brings up a great point. We were even talking about Wemby and how Brunson and Kat basically have to space, especially when they're on the offensive side for the Knicks, because they just present so many matchups. How they assign Wemby in this thing?
No, it's valid, man. And look, I think you learn things as this series goes along. We learn things, right? As we saw the Hawks and the Knicks, they adjusted. The adjustment that they made in our series, for you hoops heads out there, has gotten them here. The adjustment was, we're going to run the offense through Karl-Anthony Towns, and we're going to let Brunson run around and do other things. And ever since they beat us, they've been playing this way. And it's taken pressure off of Brunson, even though he's still scoring, Mike, but Towns has been the catalyst. That's what Brian Geltzeiler is talking about. Right. What about Mitchell Robinson? Now, you said the broken hand.
No, again, it was apparently Brian Windhorst can add orthopedist to his list of things he does, also being an aficionado on LeBron. But no, it started on ESPN this morning that they said the pinky, the bone, it's a boxer hand. Like, if you ever, like, hit a heavy bag, you didn't tape up properly, and you basically break them. He's saying it's more than just a pinky. The Knicks are saying, no, it's just a pinky. But a lot of people now are saying, what kind of feel it? First of all, he can't shoot a jump shot. We know that. His free throw shooting is abysmal. But how does it affect him as far as we talked with Brian about being physical and chipping at Wemby?
Yeah, his fifth metacarpal is what the injury is. He already had surgery. Here's Brian on Mitchell Robinson.
Well, he's going to be, to answer your second part of your question, he's going to be very, very involved. And I think this hand injury has been a little bit overblown in the respect that what exactly do you need Mitchell Robinson to do out there? Well, you need him to play defense. He's going to be able to do that, whether the hand's good or not. You need him to be able to defensive rebound and offensive rebound. You need him to be able to catch lobs and be able to handle dribble handoffs. I don't think it's going to be an issue rebounding or catching lobs. I think, you know, dribble handoff wise, if I'm San Antonio, I'm taking a shot at that hand every time he does a dribble handoff to test it a little bit and see if I can send him to the sidelines. The other thing is this, and not that he was shooting free throws well in the first place, but having an injured pinky on his right hand makes him that much worse a free throw shooter. But what's been interesting about the Hack-a-Mitch strategy is the Knicks have baited other teams with it. They certainly did that to the Cavs, where they put Mitchell Robinson out there. They were willing to live early in a quarter with the fouling of Mitchell Robinson and Robinson missing all his free throws just to get the other team in a penalty. Then they sit Robinson down, play aggressive going to the basket, and every time there's a touch foul, Knicks are shooting two free throws. So the Knicks have kind of used the hack of Mitch to work it back in their favor. Wouldn't surprise me if they do that all over again. Again, I think Robinson's going to be the same factor he would have been otherwise, whether the pinky's injured or not.
So that's Mitchell Robinson. Again, they have enough bigs. I don't know if they can affect Wemby, but look, they beat him earlier in the season, guys, and I know the Spurs are a different team. I do like the Spurs to win this series, but I will say they have enough bigs, Mike, to affect Wemby and run guys out there at him.
Right. Now, as you said, Cat's going to be, just like they figured out, you know, Mike Brown figured out that Cat had to be the guy because they went after Jalen Brunson. Brunson's going to get his, but it's going to be curious to see how he fits in that mix. What about De'Aaron Fox? Isn't it time for him to kind of step up a little bit?
Yeah, it's a good point because he's been injured. He is probably one of the most playoff experienced guys his days with the Kings before he got to the Spurs. I would tell you if he was healthy, and I don't think he's been this entire playoff, I think this would be Spurs all day. But because what happens, Mike, is De'Aaron Fox is on the bench and Stephon Castro has to play point. He had a ton of turnovers in the first couple of games against OKC. That's not what he does.
Right. So, and Josh Hart could get involved there and try to, you know.
If Fox is out there, it takes pressure off of Castro to have to deal with that. So I don't know, man. I'm curious to see what he does in this series. But he's healthier than he's been the last few series, that's
but again,
for sure.
Both teams, that's why when we talked about, you know, bringing back to the Hawks, and we'll start to look, before you know it, guys, you know, it'll be time for the draft and everything else, free agency. But we don't have an Anunoby. Not everybody has a guy like that, you know? And Bridges got heat for missing a bunch of shots in the Hawks series, but he's been a hell of a lot better since. But Anunoby, to me, is probably the X factor. In addition, you know, Cat's obvious, but I like Anunoby in his game.
I do, too. And this is why. It's going to be fascinating to see how this shakes out. And the other part of this is, you know, you got the Villanova boys, right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, New York is really that. They went and signed all of Brunson's boys.
Right. Vincenzo got the gate. Everyone else got the stick.
Yeah, and so now they have a chance to not only capture the moment as they did in college, but also, you know, a chance to do it at the NBA level. It's Dukes and Bell, Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. One other thing we want you to hear, and that's the Spurs supporting cast. Mike just brought up De'Aaron Fox. There are a ton of guys that will play a role if the Spurs end up winning this. It's not just going to be Wemby. It's going to be all of the other guys that people are not talking about that has gotten up to this point. Brian Geltzeiler talked about it.
So you're 100% right about that. But let's go through these guys one at a time. All right. First of all, I'm going to tell you right now with De'Aaron Fox, I think Mikal Bridges is going to guard him. I think Mikal Bridges is going to do a really, really good job on him. And especially with the fact that we know he's not 100%, I don't see him being a major factor in the series. Castle's a different story because I know we've heard a lot of talk about OG Anunoby spending time guarding Victor Wembanyama. And he will spend a little bit of time guarding Victor Wembanyama. He's going to have to guard Castle. Castle, you know, outside the first two games with 20 turnovers without Fox in there for the Spurs, Castle was a handful for OKC. Mm-hmm. And when I say a handful, you're talking about really strong defensive players, guys like Dort and Cason Wallace, and to a lesser extent Caruso, who's a very good defensive player, but not as strong as those other two guys. Castle threw those guys around like they were rag dolls. Goes where he wants, when he wants. The only guy in the Knicks roster that can keep him from doing that is OG Anunoby. And I think you'll see Anunoby spend a lot of time on Castle in this series. The Knicks are not sleeping on the impact Castle can have in this series because they just saw what he did to OKC. Vassell, listen, Vassell is the Knicks, I think, will handle Vassell okay because they're going to end up most likely with Josh Hart guarding him, and I think that's a good matchup for New York. The key guy you just mentioned is Champagne. Julian Champagne, because the Knicks need a place to hide Jalen Brunson. They're going to choose to hide Brunson on Champagne, in my opinion, just because Champagne's less of a threat off the dribble and just pretty much a catch-and-shoot guy. And I think what you're going to see from San Antonio early on is there's going to be some Brunson hunting going on. There's no doubt. And when they Brunson hunt, Champagne's going to be the guy that's going to be put in a lot of pick-and-roll action, a lot of pick-and-pop action, and they're going to look to see if they can get him open threes or get Brunson switched onto the ball, which is something that the San Antonio would like very much, that we saw your guys in Atlanta do well early in that series. So they're going to test this. The Knicks, since game four of the Atlanta series, have not switched a ton. They went away from doing a lot of switching. In this series, San Antonio is going to want to get them back to doing some switching. And if they're not, they will look to see if they can use Champagne as well and as much as they can to take advantage of Jalen Brunson's defensive deficiencies. So it's going to be a very, very interesting chess match to see how these guys match up. But I think early on in the series, the guy that the Knicks choose to hide Brunson on, and I think it will be Champagne, you're going to see that guy be featured a whole lot by San Antonio.
Hide him. Because yes. He doesn't play defense like that.
And it's something we talked about. And it's funny, you know, here's a guy that's considered one of the best point guards. The team's making a historic run. And then we had guys when we talked about, you know, when they moved on from Trey. Now, again, only time will tell how we move in the draft and free agency and if this team can be better without Trey. But that's where the league is trending, to your point.
Yeah.
And Brunson's more physical than Trey.
He is. No, he's thicker. He's got a bigger, thicker body than Trey. We'll be talking about it with you guys tomorrow on the show. We'll see what happens in game one. We'll be talking plenty of Braves as well. More on the Congress and the testimony. By the way, it wasn't just Nick Saban. Notre Dame's AD was there. There were other people testifying, Mike, trying to get the support of other Congress folks to say, hey, we need your help to do this. And good. Again, if they get it, then how fast are we talking about a bipartisan bill being passed? It's not going to happen this season.
Well, it is funny because the first thing you hear about this, it's a big giant glob of clay or stone. You're going to shape it. You're going to knock some off here, knock some off there. But it is kind of interesting. With this giant lump boof of a bill, two people said no. SEC and Big Ten. Nope.
They don't want it.
Like Lego Batman. Nope. So we'll see. I mean, the two biggest.
Why? Because they don't want to share?
Because they don't want to give up the high ground. They got the loot, you know? Other than, you know, Texas Tech and the Big 12, everybody else has got the money, honey.
Yeah. All right, man, we got to get out of here. Turtle's got a full show for you. Day-Day, let's clear our throat. Oh. Thanks to all of our guests today online at Odyssey.com. Make sure you get all of our content, guys. Subscribe to Dukes and Bell. You won't miss anything. All the breaking news, and of course,
don't cost nothing.
It doesn't. And you'll hear everything on 92.9 The Game as well. So make sure you do that. Hey, Day-Day, great job behind the glass. Big O's been off this week. He's doing all the things. Turtle's got a full show for you. Stay tuned, and we'll see what the Braves do tonight, man. We'll be talking about that and much more tomorrow with you guys right here starting at 2 o'clock. All right, Mike Bell, let's get out of here, man. Clear your throat.
Hey, man, the U.S. Open at Shinnecock starts in 2 weeks from Thursday. And you might remember from years ago where they had to water the greens in between the rounds because balls were rolling off hills and it was awful. Well, Scottie Scheffler, what's going on with Scottie Scheffler? He had a chance to hit a practice round. First time he'd ever been there. He goes, this is really hard. He was saying, surprised by the width of the fairways, but he said the greens and the way the greens roll and the shape of the greens, said it's going to be a really, really big challenge. This might be one of those, like, yes, like Chinese water torture U.S. Opens where over par wins it.
I don't like those.
Nobody likes it except for the guys at the USGA.
It is huge. It's a huge statement about where Caleb Williams is. He's on the cover of Madden 27, EA Sports. It's in the game. Congratulations. But is he going to take the jump? A lot of people think he is. I like the cover. I'm glad he's on it. I know the game is going to be great. But sometimes, Mike, when you start to get all this pub, you regress.
Ruh-roh.
We'll see what happens with Caleb Williams. Hey, if you love the show,
you tell your friends.
If you don't,
you're the sick son of a biscuit who's going to cook fish in the microwave at work.
Crying in West, that was too emotional